got it. Here we go at 9:06. Thank you, Ursa. On a Friday, let's get Tom in here because we got a bunch of news to get through. Right, Tommy, get on in here, would you please?
A grim Friday, I'm afraid.
Here we go again, Dominator! All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Tom and Curly Show here on Cairo Radio. News broke, about 7:20-something our time. We hear that in Houston, Texas, a student, they believe it to be a student, went into the school and began shooting. Story that we have told, and the facts are always very similar. It's either a student or a past student. Normally, they get their guns legally. They go in there, and here you go. How many people... And what is the latest on it?
Okay, so most people are reporting at least 8. CBS News has said the report has been as high as 10, between 8 and 10. And so now most news organizations are going with at least 8, maybe as many as 10 involved. One of the occasionally the shooter survived these shootings.
Yep.
And in this case, the gunman is captured and apparently uninjured, at least according to the reports that I've seen. He opened fired. Yes, it's been speculated he's a student or a former student.
Sure.
Walked into an art class just before school started and started shooting.
Mm-hmm. Here's a student. Her friend was shot.
The alarm started going off. Everybody went outside. And all the teachers are like, get this way, get this way. Come over here, come over here. Next thing you know, we hear the booms. And everybody just starts running. Everybody yelling, run, go, as fast as you can.
Mm. I wonder, did they have a resource officer on hand? I know they were debating whether or not they should arm these guys. I think only 13 schools in the Texas area, actually, or 68, have armed resource officers in 68 of the schools in Texas. I don't know if this is one of them.
Well, it sounds like there must have been one because they say that a police officer has been injured. We haven't heard any... injured, I think, is the most we can say. I guess there were early reports maybe that he might have been killed, but he was a school resource officer. So this is an example, unlike the last big case in Parkland where the resource officer was there and responded.
And chickened out.
Well, yeah.
Didn't go in.
Yeah, there are two different reports on that. One was that there was a resource officer, not the officer that was arriving at the scene, but the resource officer was in another part of the campus when it happened. Mm-hmm. By the time he got there, it was too late.
Right.
But anyway, there was a strong response, and it sounds like the school resource officer was at least one of the ones that injured. There are, I think they said there were two adults that are in surgery and one student at this point.
Another student describes how he escaped.
My friend said he saw some kid walking down the hallway with a gun or something, so he casually walked, and then he pulled the fire alarm. He ran out, and then he ran, and then everybody was outside, and then the teachers heard, you know, they were telling us to back up and everything, and then Vaughn told everybody to run because 3 shots, you know, heard. So we all took off in the back, and I grabbed her and ran to the trees because, you know, I don't want to be in sight, and then... I heard 4 more shots, and then we jumped the fence on some dude's house, and then we ran to the car wash, and then we were sitting there trying to figure out everything that's going on, and I saw some girl. She had she got shot in the kneecap, I guess, and she had a bandage around it. She was limping, and then firemen came and got her later and everything, but other than that, you know, I honestly don't know.
Mm, there you go. What are we going to say about it?
Yeah, that's the disturbing thing. When these first happened, when Columbine happened, I think it was 24/7 kind of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
These days, it's like, okay, that Parkland only happened a few months ago.
Yeah.
A major response. There was another mass shooting in Texas in the same state where this happened earlier, where 25 people, including a pregnant woman, hit.
Yeah.
This is, it's the state of the world or the country right
mental
now.
Mental illness.
I'm afraid.
Let's assume it's mental illness. Can I make that assumption?
No.
Something's wrong with you. You go into a school and you shoot a bunch of unarmed people, right?
Well, I mean, that could be true of a lot of crimes. I don't know if that's, but yeah, okay.
We're not talking about a lot of crimes. I'm talking about going into a school.
No, but I mean, a
going
lot of people
into a church.
Crimes could be seen as mentally ill.
Right, I understand that.
So just because they commit a crime doesn't mean they're mentally ill. You think in this case, no one would do this if they're not mentally ill?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly the case of the Parkland shooting, right? And certainly Adam Lanza obviously had some sort of screws loose as well. All right, here we go. We'll get more details as to when they finally come down with the numbers, as if that matters, if it's 8 or 9 or 10. Either way, even they say, you know, one death is a tragedy, two is a statistic.
Well, not in these cases.
No, I understand that. Yeah. No, I mean, that's it's an expression that's used when it comes. You just start giving more and more and more numbers.
Yeah.
It the fact that one life is lost, that's the tragedy, and then each one has its own tragedy. Hey, by the way, good news. Fred Hutch, who for the longest time has been on the forefront of trying to find a cure for cancer. Every year they have a great big gala and they raise millions and millions of dollars. And Mary Bezos, Jeff's mother, gives, I think, like $5 million or $10 million. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Dollars equals research equals cancer cures. Or now the news breaks is this, that Fred Hutch closes in on a cancer cure. Yes. And this is a specific type of cancer or all cancer?
Well, it is multiple cancers. So they are looking at a whole range of cancers, blood cancers, lung cancer, breast cancer, melanoma. They're planning a clinical trial for pancreatic cancer. There's one already underway for ovarian cancer. Reading this, it just makes me a little nervous, even with seeing something like this as a headline. The Hutch closes in on a cancer cure, because this is something we've been working on for decades.
Yeah.
And it
closes
seems
in,
to be,
that yeah, means how close.
Close, yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, so the basic news is something that people that have been following the development of the fight against cancer won't find too surprising. It's this idea of immunotherapies, where you take your body's own immune system and have them seek out and destroy mm-hmm. cancer cells. What they've said is most surprising. So this has been a theory that's been in practice in clinical trials for a while. But what is so stunning and why it's mentioned so highly in this article is that they've had, quote, mind-blowing results in early testing on mm-hmm. the blood cancers, for instance.
Okay.
That it seems to be, for instance, one guy, a patient with leukemia, I don't know if it's a man or a woman, remission rate of 93%.
Mm-hmm.
They consider that astounding. The idea is that they are getting much closer, much faster than even they were expecting to do. Now, it's still in the early stages, but the new, relatively new, the last 3 years, with the president or the top doc at Hutchinson, Fred Hutchinson Center, said that he was thinking that by 2025, okay, we'd have a cure for cancer.
Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the fact that you cure cancer.
Okay.
Okay. And did you see the piece? You and I both got a chance to read
yes.
the thing in Independent. I
yes.
think this is more thought-provoking than are they 10 years, 20, 15, or 20, or 30 years away. Let's talk about if they cure cancer.
Okay, we're going to do that at 9:30.
All right. I'm going to mention that. I'm just going to give a little tease
okay.
to it.
Gotcha. Okay.
This one doctor who had mentioned that this is prior to it, he says, don't waste your time. Don't waste your time trying to find a cure for cancer, because cancer is actually a good death. Is that one of the parts that kind of got you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No, it's very intriguing. We die of something.
Right.
If you had to pick something you're going to die of.
He says die of cancer.
Why not cancer?
Right. So we'll look at also the aspects of what happens if they do find a cure for cancer. Will people change their behavior in a negative way? We had seen that when you could live with HIV, more people started having more unprotected sex, which now has driven up chlamydia and other STDs. So the question is, if they had a cure for cancer, why should I not smoke? Right?
Well,
no, seriously. Or eat food that could possibly cause cancer.
Okay. We'll get into this in a bit then.
But
okay,
you don't think, listen, Tom, if somebody was able to say, hey, listen, you can do this, 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 and this, and you won't get this cancer, people would go back to the behavior. I think one of the reasons people stop smoking is because the fear of cancer.
Yes, but the thing is, you still get cancer. You just may be cured of the cancer.
I got
not sure
it.
You want to go through having your lungs look like what they do, and you know there are medical consequences of getting cancer. It's just that we can now cure it. It's no longer a fatal disease. People right now are not waving their hands saying, "Hey, I want to get AIDS because I know cure it." It's or if not cure it, postpone it so long that it's not going to be a fatal disease. But still,
people change their behavior depending upon the risk factors. Right?
Yeah.
Do this. Rent a car and waive the insurance. See how you drive. Or get in a car without the seatbelt on and drive fast. People feel a little safer if they do particular activities in order to decrease the risk of themselves. I'm saying if you knew that you could smoke and not get cancer because they could cure you with a shot or something else, it would change the behavior of how people take on assumed risks.
I think the more interesting question is, how do you want to die?
Ah,
no. I mean, if you're going to have to die of some kind of disease, because that's the thing. The plague was a big deal at the mm-hmm. time. You figured out how to not die of plague.
Right.
Cancer comes. I mean, the body or the or nature or whatever, life figures out a way to expunge itself.
Yeah. My dad stood over my Aunt Mary's deathbed there in her, the house that she had lived in, the room that she had slept in since she was 2 years old. She's dying of terminal lung cancer. And my dad stands there and runs through the list of other things that didn't kill her. Knowing she was just a couple of days away. He goes, hey, look at the right side. At least she didn't get dementia. You imagine that, sitting in the corner drooling? And the other thing is you didn't have a heart attack. And that's good, too. Or a stroke. You avoided the stroke. And I'm telling you, that's even worse. Imagine this. So she's sitting there, right, Tom?
Yeah.
He's like, hey, you could have gotten dementia. You could have had a stroke. You could have been in the corner. He always had people in the corner drooling. That was his biggest thing. He said, so as far as you're concerned, you should feel yourself lucky.
You know, and there is, I mean, your dad is crazy and right at the same time.
Right.
Because I think the issue isn't what you die of, maybe, but when you die of it.
Yes, okay. Hey, at least you avoided dementia. All right, D.B. Cooper. Tom, finally, someone says they have the information that we now know who D.B. Cooper is.
Yes, and we have some audio, right?
Yes, we do.
Play the audio first?
I think so.
Okay.
Here's Walter Recca. I think I'm saying the name incorrectly because that's what I do with every name. The man who confessed to being D.B. Cooper gave an interview to the Daily Mail before he died with details of the hijacking.
Now, where did you carry your note? Inside pocket of the suit. What was the note about?
I can't remember right there. This is a hijack and I've got explosives.
So you did hand her the note, and since she kind of put it in her pocket, like she said, I can't believe you're actually hijacking this airplane.
And I says, I can't believe it either, but I'm serious.
Anything on how you told them to get the parachutes and the money in $20 bills and whatnot?
Used $20 bills.
Oh, you wanted all used ones?
Yeah, I didn't get all used ones, but I got a lot of them were used.
How did you order the parachutes? Did you say, I want four parachutes, or did you order two reserves and two backpacks?
Two reserves and two backpacks.
Okay, so here's more from the guy that says he is D.B. Cooper.
And just to clarify, this is not an interview that he did with the Daily Mail.
No.
This is an interview that he did with a guy, a friend, who's now written a book about this.
Yeah.
And he gave so he interviewed him and recorded it, and that gave that interview to the Daily Mail, which is now published.
Here's the more from the man that claims to be D.B. Cooper.
When you hijacked the airplane and they were flying from Seattle, Tacoma, now you're going to jump. You ordered them to have the gear down.
Right there. Well, the wheels down slow the aircraft down right there. And the flaps right there is when we're jumping right there. You know, you give it flaps right there, cut power. There's drag right there, so I'm not going to be hit.
Why did you open the one parachute in the airplane?
See, that it wasn't tied off.
Was that a reserve or a main?
It was a main.
So now you're down to the one main.
Mm-hmm.
Did you wear a reserve when you did this?
No.
The parachute that you opened in the airplane, you did cut shroud lines off it, you know. What did you do with the shroud lines?
And the money onto me. Took my belt from around my waist, tied it around my raincoat, put the money in there, right there, buttoned it all the way up to my neck.
And then put the parachute on?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. So, experts on D.B. Cooper, Felix Spinell, have we heard from him? Anybody?
I don't think so yet. But what's interesting about this is, yes, this could all be concocted. Right. There's enough information about what could have happened or what did happen or what if that somebody who just, you know, boned up on this could have come up with some of these answers. But still, the fact that there's audio. By the way, that guy, that voice you were hearing, he died a few years ago, so he's no longer. I think he died in 2014 at the age of 80.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not around. That's convenient if you're concocting a story that he's not around. But it did. One of the things I thought was interesting is he explained what happened when he landed. He did not die, obviously, but he did hit a tree and injured his leg. He had no idea where he says he apparently walked 2.5 miles to the Teenaway Junction Cafe in Washington State, called his friend Don Brennan to come and pick him up. He had no idea where he was, and so he got this guy at the bar, and they name him to give his buddy the directions over the phone. He was soaking wet and freezing, he's quoted as saying. You know, he was wearing those penny loafers. He says that he picked his friend then, Brennan, picked him up and drove him home to Heartline, Washington, where the following Monday, then again, this was over Thanksgiving weekend, following Monday, he showed up for work like nothing ever happened. And this is where it gets more like a mystery or a spy show. After 2 months, he was approached at work by two strangers. They asked him if he'd like to spend the rest of his life in prison or if he'd prefer to work for them as a covert government agency. And so that's where they say that he is now, that he spent the bulk of his life after this as a spy or as a secret agent. The name of the book is D.B. Cooper and Me, A Criminal, A Spy, My Best Friend.
Right.
So do you think, how much of this do you take seriously?
None of it.
None of it. Okay. See, I still do. There are enough details that I want to believe that this is
two
true.
People walk in. He worked at Boeing, didn't he?
No, not at Boeing. It was, I forget now what the name of the place was, but.
He was involved in aviation? I thought he was involved in aviation.
Yeah. All right. I don't have that underlined.
I mean, all the way into the end until the two people come up.
No, I know. That I agree.
Right.
That seems like, oh.
Is one of them dressed as a monkey?
How convenient was that? But,
all right. Let's see.
He's an iron worker on the Grand Coulee Dam.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. All right. Because there's lots of speculation that he'd worked for Boeing and that he was an engineer involved in aviation.
Well, by the way, he was a former paratrooper, U.S. paratrooper. And so clearly he learned how to jump and all.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, idle speculation or. Fun and games, but maybe it's the truth.
How about the teen that got caught? He was the one that was responsible for lighting the great big Columbia Gorge fire, and the judge has determined that you're a teenager, you got a long time to be able to make money, and we're going to want you to pay back, and your sentencing will be what?
Well, and so the judge is still considering this. There have been 11 requests for restitution totaling, guess what? $37 million
just
for the damage and the rescue attempt. Yeah. This is from the state of Oregon and all of this. Now, the judge originally made him write 150 letters of apology to people's property that he had damaged. But they're just considering he's only 15 years old, and the judge, has to come up with whatever reasonable amount that can be, and the 15-year-old's lawyer says, well, obviously $37 million is absurd. You can't do that. And so there's a lot of speculation about what can be done. I mean, it was such – the consequences were so hellacious.
Yeah.
You can't just let this kid off, I don't think, with kind of a don't do that again, son. By the way, what he did was he threw two lit firecrackers into the woods, and it started this fire. And he's admitted to that and pleaded guilty. U.S. Forest Service has asked for the biggest amount, $21 million, and Department of Transportation in Oregon wants a 12.5. So the big question is, how much should he be penalized? John, if you were the judge, what would you give him?
For somebody who lit a fire like this?
Yes.
I think community service would be the way to go.
I think you want
him to learn from this and maybe see the lives that he had affected.
And
maybe he ends up getting knowledge and wisdom from this experience, and it makes him a better person.
But community service, I mean, this was a massive fire.
So, I'm not just talking about picking up garbage on Saturdays. I'm talking about something else.
Okay, but community service, so for how long? For instance, the financial penalty that he'd be given would last him a lifetime. Would you want him to do community service for like 10 years?
I haven't given that much thought.
Okay.
But this is one of the questions in the know-it-all quiz.
Oh, it is.
So
okay.
I do give you three options.
Adopt a gingerly run. By the way, they say that you have some leeway if you're the judge on this, that you can like charge him X amount of money, but after 10 years of, relatively low payments, you could suspend it if he stays out of trouble, all these kinds of things, social engineering of his behavior.
You know, Copper River Salmon Days is today. That's the first big king salmon comes from Alaska.
You must be yawning because you get up so early.
No, you know what? They stopped using me. They used to have a big thing, and the salmon would show up, and everybody would make a big deal, and I was there doing a great job as the MC of the whole event. I got Stephen Hauschka almost kicked the salmon head, which caused big problems.
And
they replaced me.
Yes.
2 years ago or a year ago.
With somebody better?
No. So I'm surprised they're still doing it. I think they should just call the whole thing off.
Well,
it actually a big deal.
It used to be a big deal because you were on our show, and so we made it a big deal. But now that you're not on it
anymore, cares?
Who cares?
Right.
That's right. It's going to be more expensive this year because there's been a low
catching. We'll be right back. Here we go, Keel Mortgage. All your mortgage needs. I saw today in the Wall Street Journal that interest rates, the years of low interest rates going away. Ursula, did you see that?
I sure did.
Yeah, you better call Keel Mortgage right now, 1-888-778-KIEL. Talk to them about mortgage needs, especially if you need to refinance, take some equity out of the house, and do something nice for yourself. Maybe a new bathroom or kitchen or something like that. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL, CL53969. Top of the news. Tom and I talked about how the big announcement comes from Fred Hutch Cancer Research Center, and they had been saying for years and years that we will be the ones that will find a cure for cancer. And they raise money, and they do a tremendous job, and they attract some of the best researchers in the world because they have the finances. And it's, they always say dollars equals research equals a cure, and it seems like they say they're closer than ever. Is that how they're going to sort of phrase this?
Yes, and the new head of Fred Hutch, as of 3 years ago, has pointed to a year 2025 is when they'll be able to announce a cure for cancer or some cancers. People are a little nervous about that because they tend to be very they want to undersell what they can do, but they say it's spurred people on, and there's reason to believe that could happen.
So then we started to think, okay, what would the world be like if they actually found a cure for cancer, and what would be the benefits, and what would be the unintended consequences if we now had a cancer-free world?
So some stats. There's a scientist that got in a lot of trouble when he proposed a while back that, you know, We're spending billions on trying to find a cure for cancer. It's taken us decades. And he says that may be money misspent.
Mm-hmm.
That after all, because of the research on cancer, we can now delay your demise by cancer long enough that this might be one of the more ideal kinds of death.
Yes, you should welcome cancer.
Yes, that you should not be spending all this money on trying to cure something that you're going to die of something anyway.
Right.
And maybe this is a better way to go than a lot of other options. And so he goes through some rationale. So in other words, why wouldn't you want to cure cancer? And he says, because it takes so long, you can actually have plenty of time. Usually people have 3 to 5 years for most cancers to kind of prepare themselves and say their goodbyes and do whatever their bucket list they want to do. And he says, after all, cancer still tends to be a disease of older people, that 3/4 of people who die of cancer are 65 years or older, and half of them are 75 years or older. So they've had a life.
Yeah.
So it's not that tragic. And he says they're going to die of something anyway. If you're 75 or 85, you're going to die of something. Cancer might be preferable to some of the other options that are laying out there.
So it's a pick your poison sort of thing.
Yes.
And then the other thing is if what society bears the cost of your choice. If you say that, if let's say we've eradicated cancer and that won't be the one of the things that'll kill you, okay, this means you're going to live past the age of 85. Because as it is right now, I think here's what used to kill you. Heart disease, cancer, and chronic low respiratory diseases. So it was the top three killers
COPD.
Right back in 1999. One of those threes caused 64% of all deaths if you're 65 or older. By 2014, however, the percentages fell to 53%. So people were able to find a cure for cancer. So what that meant was the cancer man didn't get you, but then the Alzheimer man got you.
That's right. Well, that's another option is that if you have dementia or Alzheimer's, you're still going to right now, there's no cure for heart disease. I mean, we know how to live better, perhaps, same thing with cancer. But, COPD, heart disease. And then if you live long enough, you have, better than 50% chance of developing some form of dementia like Alzheimer's. And or you just die of frailty, that your body becomes so weak that you die of pneumonia, or you pick up some kind of bug that normally wouldn't kill a healthy person. So you're going to die of something. Four main ways to die. There's sudden death, they say. There's dementia, frailty, heart failure, respiratory failure, and then cancer. And cancer has now become manageable enough that we have to ask ourselves, okay, if we're going to die of something, most of us want to die of old age in our bed at night when, that's the way to go. But that's not what kills most people.
So if by 2050, here's the other part of it. Let's say that we've been able to really knock cancer out.
Eradicate cancer.
By 2050.
As a cause of death.
Nearly the number of people living with dementia will have tripled. And the cost to the individual that's caring for that person or society bearing the additional cost. So you have this huge population that was able to sort of step right over the cancer guy and go right to the dementia guy. Now you have a really aging population that's no longer working. You can't work because you're sick with dementia. And there you are with the slow demise of your mind, and you're getting more and more and more help.
Yeah, this is a pretty macabre discussion, but the one benefit most people... and this is not true because there's early onset and all that.
Yeah.
Most people develop Alzheimer's and dementia later on in life than when people get cancer. And so maybe that the idea is, if that's going to kill you, if you lived a longer life, let's say you're perfectly fine until you're 80 and then you develop dementia. Is that preferable to dying of cancer at 70?
70,
or something like that. That's the kind of question you have to ask.
I guess it all depends
yourself.
On what you did with those 10 years.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So if you avoided the cancer man.
When, healthy.
Yeah. And you lived it, right? Yeah. If you lived it. Nobody wants to talk about death. That's why I have that app on my phone called We Croak.
Oh, that's right. What's What's the message of your last message? Do you have that?
The infinite is not merely a lot more than the finite. They're not always inspiring, Tom. I got to say that right now. But four times a day, I get a note, and it comes up. You are going to die.
Yes, but to show the inefficacy of that app, how does it change your behavior? Not one whit, I suspect.
Well, no. although I find it quite disturbing, it normally comes up at a certain time when I'm on a plane. And you're like, you don't want that when you're on the plane.
That's right. There's a sudden death that you do not want to experience.
But every once in a while, it does sort of remind you that, hey, this could be your last day. One of the last ones that came up the other day was quite profound. It says that no man anywhere in the world can say with any certainty that they will see tomorrow.
So true.
Okay. So it then gets down to the idea of what do you want? What poison do you want? Would you rather have the cancer, or would you rather have your mind slowly begin to go?
Yeah. And the other thing is, do you want to die quickly, or do you want to know? Like, if you could know that right now you could say, my dad was diagnosed with prostate cancer at 65, and they say, well, you have about a 50% chance of making it to 70. He made it to 70, and then he died. But he had 5 years where he could prep himself and, you know, talk to anybody and everybody. And others, I had an aunt who died just like that, just, you know, suddenly. And it's like, do you have a preference of the way you want to go? Most people in this article, he says, most people would rather die suddenly themselves.
Yes.
But for their loved ones, it's like that's really harder on them, and they would rather have a long.
So in a selfish way, why don't you stick you around longer? Woody Allen says, I don't fear death. I just don't want to be there when it happens. So you look at it like the sudden one is the one because you just don't want any pain.
Yeah.
I don't want to suffer.
Yeah.
I don't want to have any of that. So
we'll see.
But good. Yeah. Hey, listen, congratulations to Fred Hutch Cancer. And they say, what was the year they thought they would have?
Well, they're shooting for 2025, which is, as the president said, it's getting closer by the second. I mean, it just feels like that's really on the horizon.
Remember when that attorney in New York went after the folks who were speaking Spanish? Where was he? A deli or something like that? He was mad, and he says, you know, I'm going to call ICE. That's my next call is to ICE. And somebody captured on videotape. But apparently when they did enough work on this guy, they found that he had done something similar to this. His life, after that rant, I don't know how long it took, his life is in the toilet right now.
They say there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think this might be an example of just that very
thing. How's he coming back from this one? The latest saga of the man that yelled at a Hispanic person in a deli because they were speaking Spanish. We'll be right back. All right. Don't forget Muckleshoot Bingo bringing you the know-it-all quiz happening at 11:32 today. We're going to ask you five questions, the stories we have covered all week. All you got to do is, where are we setting the bar today?
Let's do two today.
Two. But the problem is, Tom, when you give them two, if they don't get two, they don't get the others right, then what do we do, hang up and hire somebody else? Lower the bar even more.
Okay. They don't even have to get any right. Is that the bar you
want?
Yeah,
about that. Just stay on the phone. Stay on the phone. Occasionally make
a collapse of standards in the United States.
Occasionally make a sound of like exhalation.
That's right. They're still on the line at the end of the quiz,
they get it.
They win it.
And what do they win? They win tickets to the Mariners. That's right. It's a second chance Mother's Day game coming up on Sunday. We're going to give you two tickets. If you find out more, go to Mariners.com. And the first 10,000 moms get a tote bag, Tom.
Is that right?
Carry around their diapers and all of their guilt.
I hope it's a see-through tote because you can't carry the things that you can't
see.
If you're a mother,
you can carry stuff.
Wow.
Get your baby wipes
and your baby
snacks
photos.
And all the other stuff. So first 10,000 moms get themselves a Mariner's tote, Tom. So there you go. All right, and that is the know-it-all quiz coming up at 11:34. That's where you get on the phone to do that. We're going to go to CBS because they have the latest on the shooting there outside of Houston. They have some new details as to what the gunman did when he entered the school. I had seen an early report that he was a student and 17 years old is the age that now is being given. But apparently as he walked into the school at 8 a.m. and began shooting in an art class, as he was walking by some of the rooms, he did something else that the police have found out about. So let's go to CBS News now with the update. And I believe we'll probably take this to the top of the hour. This is the Tom and Curly Show right here on Cairo Radio.
CBS News special report in Santa Fe, Texas. Police and now ATF agents are trying to clear explosives from the school where a gunman killed at least eight people and injured about a dozen more. KHOU-TV's Jeremy Rogalski.
At 8:03, There was police scanner traffic from one of the officers on the scenes, and I quote, "We have two visible IEDs, improvised explosive devices." He also said that, "Officer, we may have a live pipe bomb."
Law enforcement says the gunman, a student, has been arrested and others being questioned. Someone set off a fire alarm after seeing the gunman.
As soon as the alarms went off, everybody just started running outside. And next thing you know, everybody looks and you hear boom, boom, boom. And I just ran as fast as I could.
Sonia Lopez is worried about her daughter, Sarah.
We haven't heard or seen her. We haven't talked to her. She's not answering her cell phone. So we're just keeping her in our prayers, hoping she's okay.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Peter King.